and welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO, in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, October 25th, 2013, and I am your host, Jenny Rempel. Today I am joined by Cynthia.
Hello.
Allison.
Hi there.
Who's here operating the board. Alyssa, Jackie, and Tim are away today. So welcome to today's show. Today we are designing the show to get you ready for a cruelty-free Halloween. Horror movies are all well and good, but there are many real-life horrors that animals around the world and right here at home face every day. First, we have an interview with Lucas Soloway, the National Outreach Coordinator for Mercy for Animals Canada. We will discuss Mercy for Animals Canada's recent expose on CTV's W5 regarding their Egg McMisery campaign. Later in the show, we are featuring three lovely vegan burlesque ladies who will be sharing their tips on cruelty-free makeup, costumes, and feminism. Joining us will be Bettina May, Anya Keister, and Lana Delamore. But first, Cynthia is going to talk to us about her experiences here on Co-op Radio as part of the Animal Voices Fall Membership Drive as part of the radio station's fundraising campaign. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living, broadcasting live every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and bringing you interviews, commentary, news, and events that you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and abroad. We encourage the movement towards a world where non-human animals are treated with compassion and mercy and afforded the basic right to live free from exploitation. In addition to our live broadcast here on 100.5 FM and at coopradio.org, our shows are also available as podcasts on iTunes and at animalvoices.org after airing. So to start things out for the Halloween show, we're going to have Cynthia talk in a minute. But first, what are you guys being for Halloween?
I don't have a costume yet. Cynthia, yeah, I have to get one.
Maybe today will be
better. Put me on the spot here. I haven't thought about it, but last year I dressed up as like this 80s like person and basically just used clothes out of my own wardrobe. But anyways, while I have the microphone, I just wanted to give a shout out to a new listener of ours, Jason Burr from last night. Hope you're listening and thanks for listening to the show and supporting us.
That's awesome. I think it's really great to meet new people. I'm going as Alice in Wonderland, so maybe I'll make some new friends this Halloween.
Cool. Awesome. And speaking of support, it's our annual membership drive, or bi-yearly, I think it is. Right, Allison? Or
we do it twice a year.
Twice a year.
Spring and fall.
Spring and fall. So this is my first membership drive. I'm the newest person on the Animal Voices Collective, and I'm really honored and proud to be part of the Animal Voices Collective. A lot of people don't know we're actually all volunteer, so all the hours that go into the show are completely volunteer. The whole radio station is run by volunteers that run the shows, and it's the time now to call in to donate some money to us. So for Animal Voices, we're trying to raise $1,000, which isn't much if our 1,000 listeners, I hope we have, all donate some money, we could reach our goal. So all through today's show, you can call in at 604-684-8494. That's 604-684-8494 to become a member. So by donating, you become a member of the radio station, which is really cool because this is a membership-run co-op radio station. So your voice really counts. It's not like the other commercial radio stations were run by the people for the people. So calling in, you can call in anytime today. You can also donate online at coopradio.org. And make sure you pick Animal Voices as your favorite show because obviously you're listening because this is your favorite show. I'm, like I said, really proud to be part of Animal Voices. I recently joined and I've also started to produce shows, which has been really exciting. And I've got to interview some of my biggest mentors, for example, Will Tuttle, who I interviewed a few months ago, and that was one of the most amazing experiences ever. And I think the interview was amazing as well, if I do say so myself.
It was a good interview, I have to say that.
Yeah. And even last week, I interviewed Brenda Bronfman from Wishing Well Sanctuary.
Another excellent interview.
Thank you. And just connecting with these people. And before I became a co-host and producer on the show, I listened to Animal Voices, and it was great to hear what's happening in town and outside, what's going on with animal-related issues, events. And so I really think we bring you valued programming. So please support us by donating, calling us at 604-684-8494. And I'll be answering the phones. So if you call, you get to speak to me. Really exciting.
Talk to Cynthia in person.
Talk to me. I'm a holistic nutritionist and a yoga teacher. So when you call in to become a member, I can answer any of your questions related to yoga and nutrition. Or if you just want to have a quick little chat.
Do you offer spiritual guidance?
I do. I can guide you through anything you need. And anything vegan related, of course, as well.
So also vegan guidance.
vegan guidance, spiritual guidance, nutritional guidance. It's all interconnected. It's all yoga.
Yeah, I want to point out, too, while we are locally focused, we're a show that broadcasts here from Vancouver, Canada, we are also a podcast that is broadcast on our website. You can listen to our show anytime from all over the world, any part of the world where there's an internet connection, which is basically anywhere.
And we're on iTunes, so you could also download the podcast and listen to them without internet connection.
Yeah, so animalvoices.org, you can listen to all of our past shows there. I encourage people to do that for sure. Don't just think that you need to tune in at this one certain time on Friday at noon. I don't expect people to always be available then. Maybe you are, maybe you aren't. But if you aren't, please do go on to our website, and all of our content is there. And we provide it, you know, whether you donate or not. We just want people to get the information that we give, which is local animal rights news and international. We cover everything.
Exactly. And you can listen to our podcast, and you can also donate at any time. So if you're listening right now as a podcast, then you can just go to coopradio.org to donate towards Animal Voices for this membership drive.
Yeah, for sure. And you can do that anytime. It doesn't have to be during the show. Just anytime you feel like it. Yeah, coopradio.org.
Definitely. And you get a tax receipt as well for $25 or over, which will be issued to you and sent to you in February. So it's you get tax receipt. There's no reason really not to donate. I can't think of one.
One thing, too, I want to mention is if you're short on money, a really good option for donating is to do a sustaining membership where you can donate just like $5 a month. That's what I do. And it just comes out of your bank account. I think you can do it out of your credit card as well. And it really like feels like, you know, you don't even really feel it. As Alyssa always likes to say, yeah, I don't even feel it because it's only $5. So that really helps us out a lot. And the good thing about that is that you don't have to renew your membership. So we don't have to ask you every year to please renew, because it's just an ongoing thing that shows your ongoing support for $5 a month. So yeah, so coopradio.org or 604-684-8494.
Drishti Point is a radio program featuring interviews about yoga, spirituality, and wellness. Our guests include yogis, authors, musicians, healers, and renowned spiritual teachers. Tune in Tuesdays from 5 to 6 p.m. for your weekly dose of yoga wisdom and inspiration.
I have this week's Animal Voices news for you, and this is a breaking news story right now I have for everyone. Strange noises coming from High Road near Sunshine Dairy Farm Monday night and into yesterday morning prompted local police to alert residents that there's nothing spooky or scary going on. According to Newberry Police, Sergeant Patty Fisher, the noises are coming from mother cows who are lamenting the separation from their calves. The separation of mother cows from their calves is a yearly occurrence and is a normal function of a working dairy farm, Fisher said. It happens every year at the same time, she said. She also said her department received at least 4 calls between midnight and 7 a.m. yesterday morning regarding inhuman sounding noises, prompting her to post a quick message on their Facebook page yesterday, which said, residents in the area of Sunshine Dairy Farm may notice loud noises coming from the dairy cows at all hours of the day and night. We've been informed that the cows are not in distress and that the noises are a normal part of farming practices. What do you think about that? Not in distress? Isn't that why the cows are actually making these lamenting noises of being separated from their baby calves?
I couldn't help but laugh at this story that people are somehow like surprised or don't realize the atrocities being committed here.
I just can't believe the writer of the article or whoever left that statement to say that they're not distressed. I'm pretty sure crying is the sound of distress. Last time I checked in a dictionary.
It's the owner of the farm. So there you go.
That comes to us from Massachusetts.
Yes, I wasn't sure what MA was because I just got the story, barely had time to take a look. But thank you for passing that one on, Jenny. So here's another one. This is a really interesting story. The second news story comes at an apt time, just a few weeks after our elephant show that we featured on October October 4th here on Animal Voices, in which we did an interview with Liam Cronin of PETA about circus cruelty in the elephant entertainment industry. So this Wednesday, the Los Angeles City Council voted unanimously to ban the use of bull hooks for wrangling elephants. It's a move that could prevent major circuses from coming to town. City Hall was packed Wednesday for the 13-0 vote. The crowd included a number of celebrities who support the ban. There were tears in the audience over graphic undercover video reportedly showing elephants being trained. Bull hooks are used in the training and management of elephants. It is a weapon that is used each and every time a circus trainer works with an elephant in order to compel strict obedience. Ringling Brothers Circus issued a statement that said in part, today's decision was unsupported by any evidence or proof of elephant abuse in Los Angeles, and more importantly, it did not implement any measures that would improve the welfare of animals. Ringling Brothers says its events bring more than $1 million to the city economy and support more than 1,500 jobs. And the ban will be phased in over 3 years while existing contracts are accommodated. And activists were disappointed by the delay. But actress and longtime activist Lily Tomlin says it's just the beginning and that it will spread to other cities. I really like this quote from her. She says, it has been a long time coming and it is a very big step for Los Angeles and to show the rest of the country. I do believe that the wind blows from west to east and so does change. So what do you think from that? I do feel myself as well, just as this sort of reminds me of how West Hollywood has banned all fur sales from their community, and that I think that's just like a first step, and here it is happening in LA again, so good for Los Angeles.
Gotta start somewhere.
Yeah,
exactly. And we have another story related to Halloween. As Halloween approaches, black cats and felines of other colors will be on the prowl. This story comes to us from the West Volusia Beacon, which is located in Florida. In this Florida community, local animal shelters now allow the adoption of cats during October. Did you know that many shelters will not allow cats to be adopted in October? And I think that actually goes for BC as well.
Yeah, I was shocked to hear that. I had no idea.
Yeah, so there you go. So in years past, many animal welfare organizations around the U.S. suspended placing cats and with new owners in the weeks leading up to Halloween for fear the animals would be abused or subjected to cruelty. In some instances, too, people would adopt black cats as decorations or conversation pieces for Halloween parties, only to return them to the shelter after the holiday passed. Tyler Stover, the community outreach shelter director of the Halifax Humane Society in Daytona Beach in Florida, said the issue about cats and Halloween is really a myth. We haven't really found any hard evidence to support it. It may be just another urban legend. However, Gloria Thomas, the executive director of the West Volusia Humane Society, cautioned that she does carefully screen people wishing to adopt cats and any other animals in her shelter. And in at least one instance, she recalled that someone had asked for a black cat before Halloween. And upon learning that they were not adoptable during October, they took a white one instead and subsequently spray painted the cat black, and then later back the cat to the shelter, and they couldn't get the black spray paint off. So there you go.
Wow.
That is insane.
One of my cats was attacked once on Halloween, so it's always, be careful as people, be careful as animals. It can be a scary time out there. Speaking of scary things, Lucas Soloway is the National Outreach Coordinator for Mercy for Animals Canada, and he's here with us in the studio today. MFA Canada was featured on CTV's W5 this past Saturday with an expose of Canada's egg industry. In connection with this investigation, they've launched eggmccruelty.ca, a website sharing information and actions related to the atrocities in the Canadian egg industry. Welcome to the show, Lucas.
Thank you for having me.
Hi, it's great to see you again.
Thank you.
Last time was during the Pride Parade. Remember that?
We were all together during that. That was so much fun. That
was a lot of fun.
Well, not so much fun is the story that you've brought us. So can you tell us a little bit about what the egg industry investigation uncovered?
Sure. So during the course of her employment, our investigator documented thousands of egg-laying hens crammed inside tiny wire battery cages, each with less space than a sheet of notebook paper, to live her entire miserable life, unable to walk or even spread her wings. Workers smashing the heads of chicks and then throwing them still alive and conscious into plastic garbage bags to slowly suffocate. Chickens were also trapped in cage wire, mangled by factory machinery, and suffering from open wounds They had torn beaks. They were left to suffer without proper veterinary care. As well, dead hens were left in cages with live hens still laying eggs for human consumption. So it was quite shocking.
And do you think this is standard industry practice, or was this an isolated incident, in your opinion?
Well, the thing is, the Canadian egg industry is self-regulated. It's self-inspected. And these are fairly standard practices, especially in large-scale egg production.
The investigation that was featured on your website, it says that it's from Burnbrae Farms, the egg supplier, which is apparently McDonald's Canada's exclusive egg provider. Do they have other clients as well, or can you speak to that relationship a bit?
Well, Burnbrae is actually one of the biggest egg suppliers and distributors in the country, so chances are you can be getting it at your grocery store as well.
And the CTV investigation actually listed Cuckoo and Creekside Grove Farms, but your website talks about Burnbrae. So can you talk about that relationship a little bit?
Sure. So the chicks are born at Creekside Grove Farms. And once they're a bit bigger, they're sent to Cuckoo to produce eggs. And that's where you see the battery farming footage. So the thumping, which is basically hitting the baby chick's head on a hard surface, the chicks in garbage bags, that was all at Creekside. And then at Cuckoo, that's where you see all the gruesome battery cages. And then Burnbrae is the distributor. So Burnbrae then distributes eggs to companies such as McDonald's.
Oh, wow. I was really disturbed in the footage on W5 to see that some of the chicks were actually incinerated while they were alive, because they don't always die during the thumping process. It was pretty disturbing for me to see. What do you think of people who think that factory farms and these kind of atrocities only happen in the United States?
Well, that's one reason Mercy for Animals Canada exists. We're here to expose and document these abuses and to let Canadian consumers know what's going on so they can make informed decisions. This is our second undercover investigation in Canada in the past year. Our first one took place at one of the biggest pork producers in the country, Puritone. And this is the second time we've exposed horrific abuses on Canadian factory farms. So we're here to let Canadian consumers know what's going on, and they can do something. They can take action, and they can visit mercyforanimals.ca to find out what we're doing.
And how is Canada different from the U.S. in terms of animal welfare and these sort of standards?
They're pretty much the same thing in terms of on factory farms, baby chicks are debeaked. Baby pigs are castrated while fully conscious. All these abuses do take place. Battery cages, gestation crates, shipped in horrible conditions to slaughterhouses. The abuses are the same in each country. There's just slightly different laws.
So I watched the expose last night online, and I just want to let people know that you can still watch this. It's online. Do we have it on our website, Jenny? Did you post it on there?
I posted a link a few days ago, and excellent. I'll repost it.
So animalvoices.org, you can check it out there, and it's available to watch for free, definitely if you're in Canada, at least on the W5 program. It's about a half hour long. And anyways, I watched it last night, and what I found really interesting is the way that the producers of this segment kind of put it together was they always want to show the other side's response, right? Because that's what fair investigative reporting is about. So they gave the Egg Farmers of Canada, which is a national organization,
a lobby group.
Yeah. Well, they gave them the fair opportunity they gave them a private viewing of the undercover footage and gave them a fair opportunity to respond to the cameras, knowing that this would be shown nationally on television. What is your response to what is happening here? We have this video footage documentation. And what was their response, do you think? Do you think they would say, oh my goodness, this is atrocious, you know, this is like, we're totally not in support of this? Or would they just refuse to respond? What do you think? Well, what happened is really they didn't give any response. So, Lucas, what do you think of the industry's response here in that they just kept pushing the W5 reporter away and just not wanting to give a response?
Well, this is indicative that they have something to hide. If these were isolated incidents, then why did the Egg Farmers of Canada send a message to every single egg farmer in the country saying, lock your doors, don't talk to the media? There clearly is
don't talk to W5 specifically,
exactly,
is what they were saying. And they denied that they were targeting W5, but you could see in the writing it said, W5 is doing an expose, shut your doors. If you've got a lock, put your lock on your barn, do not let people in.
Exactly. Yeah. We've been getting tons and tons of letters of support, or our supporters have been asking questions. And one of the majority of messages we got, I'll share an example, said, I was shocked to learn what's really happening behind the closed doors of Canada's egg industry. As a consumer, I feel misled by the Egg Farmers of Canada and McDonald's Canada. I had no idea that baby chickens were being smashed and left to suffocate in garbage bags, or that hens were crammed into filthy battery cages for their entire miserable lives. If the egg industry's claim that they have nothing to hide is really true, why did they send a memo out to all the farms in the country telling them to lock their doors or hide from the media? So this is the sentiment we're getting from many concerned citizens of Canada.
It's very suspicious. And when you're saying that consumers are being misled, they certainly are. On the W5 program, they showed what the egg industry wants the consumers to see, which was the commercials that they show.
Although none of those commercials really ever feature animals in them. They just show the eggs and happy people.
Yeah.
But I wonder why that
it's
is.
It's happy people handling eggs, not showing the filth that they're crammed in. So these chickens are crammed into battery cages. And another interesting point is that the Egg Farmers of Canada said that they needed to investigate the footage to see if it was real or not. And I wonder, how can you fake that?
Yeah, CTV actually did another news story and follow-up, and there was a quote from someone linked to the story who said that they're questioning the validity of the video, and they want to look into the accurate portrayals of the video. What do you think about that, Lucas? That response?
Well, the thing is, they're just playing the PR game. And the thing is, they're trying to sidestep the issue. We have evidence, photographic video, audio, documenting that our investigator was there. Our investigator, Jennifer, took photos of the sign saying cuckoo, of the sign saying Creekside, of eggs being shipped to Burnbrae. And there's all sorts of evidence. So they're clearly trying to sidestep the issue to distract from the cruelty involved in battery cages in the egg industry.
So what can our listeners do to help to end this cruelty?
For sure. So right now we have a petition that's available on eggmcmisery.ca. We're encouraging people to sign it. You can also, just as a consumer, have power. Do not... First and foremost, make sure, if you are going to consume eggs, make sure that they're not from battery cages. But even then, one of the best things people can do is consider going egg-free. So we do have a lot more information on our website, eggmcmisery.ca, and we have amazing egg-free recipes at chooseveg.ca.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Lucas.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Lucas. So once again, it is our membership drive. So call in 604-684-8494 or go online at coopradio.org to make a donation to the station and become a member and join this awesome station and join us in giving you awesome information about animals. So first, I'm going to get into events. Our first event is from Benefiting Hearts on Noses, which is a local pig sanctuary here in Vancouver. You can donate your gently used kids' toys to Fairy Cakes. Fairy Cakes is a vegan bakery on 3586 Fraser Street in Vancouver before October 25th, which is today. So if you can get out there today, if you have any gently used toys, please go there and donate it. And you can also receive a ballot to win 2 dozen Pixies. Yum. They ask that the toys be clean, boxed, and not too huge. Halloween Costumes are welcome. And if you miss that or don't have any toys, you can also participate at their big sale. So it's this weekend, October 26th and 27th. They'll have prizes, a bubble machine, and toys. So from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., you can go and grab some new toys, well, new to your people, to the whoever's getting the toys, slightly used toys, and donate to Hearts and Noses, which is an awesome animal sanctuary for pigs. And we know recently that a lady who runs Hearts and Noses, I can't believe I keep saying noses, had a heart attack. So we definitely want to support
her. She's doing okay, though, right?
Yeah, she's
now.
Doing yeah. okay. Yeah.
Just want people to
yeah,
know
yeah.
that.
Yeah, she's definitely
That's
doing
Janice.
Okay. Janice, yeah. And at UBC, the UBC Animal Welfare Program is inviting the public to attend their annual Stratton Lecture in Animal Welfare. This year's speaker is Chris Draper of Born Free Foundation, who will be presenting a talk on captivity, conservation, and the welfare of wild animals. The lecture will commence at 12:30 p.m. on October 29th at UBC in Vancouver, in the Vancouver campus, and Lecture Theatre 160 in H.R. McMillan Building at 2357 Main Hall. And also in Vancouver on Tuesday, November 5th at 7:30 at Spartacus Books, there's a documentary screening of Meet the Truth. This is a documentary that leaves off where the inconvenient truth conveniently left off. I've seen this documentary. Has anybody else?
I have seen it. It's an excellent documentary. Must see. I encourage everyone to go see it if you haven't already, because I don't know how widely available it is, like just to watch via internet or other means. Go see it if you can, if you're free that night.
Yeah, definitely. So it's at Spartacus Books, which is a great place. And so all proceeds will be benefiting the Animal Defense League, which is a great local animal rights organization here in Vancouver. And also you were mentioning, Allison, that tonight on the Fifth Estate at 8 p.m., there is a documentary about the elephants who are being shipped from Toronto to...
Right. So I don't know if our listeners heard about this, but there has been some controversy in the news lately. The Toronto Zoo had these elephants. And if you were listening to our elephant show several weeks ago, you sort of get an idea of how elephants are treated when they're in captivity, not very well. And same goes for zoos as for circuses, right? Elephants should not be kept in confined spaces where they can't live out their lives and be an elephant, as they normally would have like tons of free space to roam around in. So they've been shipped to an animal sanctuary in the United States from the Toronto Zoo. It was a long journey. I don't know too much about it. I read a little bit about it this week, but very interestingly enough, if people want to know more about it, on the Fifth Estate television show tonight, that's on CBC here in Canada at 8 p.m., they have documented the elephant's journey from going from the zoo to the sanctuary, and you can see how that journey has gone, and now they're safe in sanctuary. So that's airing tonight at 8 p.m. I definitely want to take a look at that and see how...
That should be pretty interesting. Yeah. I know online there was a bit of controversy about the transport of the elephants because it's such a long journey.
Yeah,
I was reading.
Yeah, it's not going to be easy. It's like the last long haul before they get sanctuary in a safe haven. They were going to have to be standing in their own feces and for all that, because I guess there wasn't any choice. I guess that is what had to happen in order for them to get to their safe place where they are right now.
To get out of the zoo.
Yeah.
And also we have our weekly events in Vancouver. So every Friday, we have Fantastic Friday Nights brought to you by the Vancouver Animal Defense League from 6:30 to 8:30 at Sun Sui Wa, which is located on Main and East 23rd in Vancouver. So that's our protest against shark fin soup. And then every Friday mornings as well on Fridays, we have the Chicken Vigil hosted by Liberation BC from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. outside the Hallmark Slaughterhouse located at Commercial and East Hastings in Vancouver. If you have any animal-friendly event that you'd like to have announced on our show, please email us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or you can post on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
Thank you very much for those events, Cynthia. You are listening to the Animal Voices radio show here on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio, in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And you can call us to pledge us as part of our fall membership drive at 604-684-8494 and talk to Cynthia to get more updates and to hear about the drive.
And ask her a nutrition question.
Or a yoga question.
Hang out with her.
Or just chat.
Chill. Now we're going to move on to some Halloween hoopla, some fun stuff. Earlier this week, I interviewed Anya Keister, a burlesque performer and producer based out of New York City. She's the author of the blog veganburlesque.wordpress.com. Welcome, Anya.
Burlesque is, to put it bluntly, is creative striptease. So what that basically means is that a performer, in the span of a song, or sometimes a couple songs put together, will tell a story, and during that story, they tend to take off some of their clothing in a creative and narrative manner. It can be any gender, it can be any kind of style, and it ranges, the current burlesque ranges from a more classic kind of 1930s style to more performance art. I tend to do nerdy kind of stuff, which we call nerdlesque. But it's really kind of like a great outlet for people to be sex positive and to be creative.
That's super cool. So do you have a favorite routine that you've done in your time as a burlesque dancer?
I have a lot of acts, so it's kind of hard to pick out a favorite. I have some that I get to perform a lot. So I have a Cthulhu act. I have one where I'm a large 20-sided die that I'm actually recreating. And then it's always kind of the new acts that I'm working on. I always enjoy those.
That's very cool. So as a vegan in the burlesque world, what are the biggest challenges that you face?
Sometimes it gets very frustrating because so much of the classic burlesque, which, like I said, kind of takes the heyday of the 1930s and 40s, which you will often see at a lot of burlesque festivals, has a strong base in feathers and fur. And then some of the more modern stuff has a lot of leather in it when you're doing kind of like the fetish kind of burlesque. So it gets very frustrating because it's very hard to find an equivalent to feathers. There's, you know, a quality to them that is used a lot in burlesque. Being a vegan, you get creative. You make other kinds of fans. You make other kinds of headdresses. But it definitely is a challenge.
So as you mentioned, there's a lot of classic burlesque images that use things like feathers and fur. There's even been a whole trend around this milk routine. I'm not sure if you've seen that, but girls pour milk on themselves. There's photo shoots like that. So do you think these traditional images should be recreated with vegan products, or such as coconut milk and vegan fake furs? Or is it better to distance ourselves from these images that so often come from animal suffering?
You know, it's a definitely kind of an ethical qualm. You know, I have a fake fur stole that I made, but I've never actually used it. In my personal life, I tend not to do fake fur coats. I don't do like fake feathers in my real life, but on stage is a little bit different because sometimes to get that classic look, you kind of need that sort of thing. And it's an ethical qualm because I experiment with fake feathers for stage. You know, I do things that are, I kind of do like a lot of fake leather stuff. Furs, I'm kind of give or take about. I guess if a certain act called for it, I maybe consider it. Is that a lot of the performers I work with know I'm vegan and to do an act where I'm going to have something like that. You know, I'll kind of have the mention that, like, you know, I'm vegan or something like that, so people know. But it's definitely a hard thing, and I think that that's a decision that every performer has to make, whether or not they want to do a faux and risk it coming off as the real thing or not.
Can you recommend some potential vegan Halloween costumes for our listeners?
I've always been a big fan of just being really creative with it. I think the store-bought ones are, you know, they're kind of cliche. Sometimes they can be a good base, but, you know, like, say you want to be that flapper, but, you know, you have that feather headband, so that's not going to work. But go to, like, a sewing store and buy some nice appliques and, you know, sew some ribbon onto it and use that as your headband. It's going to look a lot more creative and a lot more authentic. And what's interesting is that, you know, costumes that may have that fur or those feathers or anything, like a feather boa. Feather boas are really, really annoying to take care of. And what's interesting is that there's a big trend in the burlesque world where a lot of people are now doing like crinoline, or they're doing all kinds of different boas because they realize how difficult it is to take care of feather boas and how they tend to not last and they're very wasteful in the long run. So, you know, vegan feather boas, or, you know, vegan-friendly boas are actually becoming a really hot trend right now in the burlesque world and probably in the fashion world too.
Oh, wow. That's a really great tip. I have a vegan boa from the Manic Panic, Tish and Suki. a sneaky mm-hmm. company. Yeah, it's made out of mm-hmm. hair, like fake hair product. So
yeah,
it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's, I mean, the current costume that I'm actually working on, you know, that I'm taking the break to do this interview for, I use a lot of fake hair, which, you know, synthetic hair looks really neat. It's definitely like spooky and goth. So, you know, add that to a Halloween item, make that into a head wrap. Add it onto a shawl. It definitely has a cool kind of look, but it's completely cruelty-free.
So what are you going as this year?
Considering that dressing up in costumes is part of my profession, Halloween, I love Halloween. I love Halloween season so much, but it's actually one of those things where, like, I like to stay in on Halloween.
So going back to the costumes, what should people be looking for or to avoid when they're choosing a vegan Halloween costume?
When it comes to things that are kind of store-bought, you definitely want to check for feathers. They love to throw feathers into costumes, and you wouldn't even know it. There's so many times where there will be a headband or some kind of, like, fascinator, hair clip or something like that, or jewelry, and then you'll look, and there'll just be, like, that little bit of feather in there that they just throw in. So you definitely want to check your items to make sure that they didn't include feathers in any sense. You can check for fur. With most Halloween costumes, you're probably not going to find actual legitimate fur. You're going to find, like, fake fur or something like that. But it's still good to check. And there's always that risk. I mean, there's been so many times where fashion places have said that it's not fur, that it's fake fur, and then it ends up being, you know, dog or cat or something like that. So I would say stay away from anything that says fake fur trim or anything like that, or always check for feathers. Silk can be a tricky one because, I mean, if it says silk, then definitely, yeah, there's going to be silk in it. But even some fabrics that are like satin blends or something like that can include some silk in it. So it can be very tricky like that. That's why I kind of like to go with good old, you know, cotton repurposing or taking stuff from thrift stores that you can definitely read the tags before you buy it to make sure it doesn't have any of that in it.
Those are some really great tips. So thanks. What are the best places to get vegan costumes from? I guess thrift stores are one option.
Since I was a child, I've always basically done thrift stores to do a lot of it, even before I was vegan, because it's inexpensive. It's something where you can buy it, you can rip it up, and you don't feel bad about it because you can just throw it away. Then if you need to afterwards, you can splatter it with fake blood. You can do all that to it. That way you can piece together a costume and you can really do, especially if you live in a city where you can drive around and there's multiple thrift stores, you can definitely piece together an amazing outfit in like one afternoon.
Do you ever order things online, or are there any particular retailers that you recommend visiting?
In regards to Halloween costumes, it might be a little bit too short notice right now. There's a company called Distinctive Fur, I think it is, that I recently ordered some kind of for like a Twilight Zone act where I needed like a really teddy bear kind of fur look for. They're pretty great. Other than that, unless it's a specific vegan site, I tend to not trust it. I got burned a couple of years ago by a company that said that they were fake feathers, I called them twice and talked to customer service, and they said that they were fake feathers. And then it arrived and I had bought 8 feathers.
That was our interview with Anya Keister, the burlesque performer and producer from New York City. You can check her out online at facebook.com/AnyaKeisterBurlesque. And Anya is spelled A-N-J-A. And you can check her out on her troupe site, d20burlesque.com, to stay in touch with her as well. This morning, I had the pleasure of talking with Bettina May. She's a Canadian-born pinup model, burlesque dancer, and photographer currently living in Brooklyn. She teaches pinup classes designed to share vintage beauty secrets and even has her own line of vegan accessories called Coquette Faux Furries, or Furriers. She's been featured a model in PETA's I'd Rather Go Naked Than Wear Fur ad campaigns. So welcome to Bettina May.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So how long have you been vegan, and why did you choose to go vegan?
Good question. I went vegan in 2007, and I was vegetarian for 10 years before that. So I decided to go vegan, or sort of became aware of it through friends of mine in high school who were, I started going to punk rock shows, and a lot of the kids there were vegetarian or vegan. And, there's a lot of like sharing of information about animal rights. A lot of the bands we listened to were, you know, really big advocates of animal rights and you know, sang songs about the atrocities in factory farms and stuff like that. And I found that really eye-opening. I'd already been someone who's really into the environment and, you know, did a lot of research on that on my own as a kid growing up. And so when I started hearing about, you know, what happened to animals, I was just shocked and horrified and didn't want any part of that industry. So, you know, when me and my friends would go out to go see punk shows, we'd all go out to eat and we'd eat vegetarian. And I thought, wow, this is great. This is delicious. The thing that sort of made the big change for me was I went on a burlesque tour of Europe in 2007. And one of the girls I was touring with was vegan. And yeah, and we knew it was going to be kind of difficult going through like Paris, or at least, you know, we thought it's all cheese and butter. So I was like, I'm going to be vegan in solidarity with her. I pretty much am anyways. And it's how I mean, that's where my beliefs are strongest. So let's both see if, you know, if there's two of us complaining about the food, maybe we'll get the tour group to go somewhere where we can both eat. So, you know, yeah. And you know, it wasn't that difficult. There's lots of places that you could eat. Even in Paris, we found this cute little vegetarian restaurant that had like soy milk, which, you know, we hadn't seen anywhere. And it was, I just remember it being such a magical moment. It's been very, very easy comparatively to what people think. You know, I toured for a year and a half nonstop through the US and a little bit in Europe as well. And people were like, oh, it must be so difficult. I'm like, you know, even in the South, once you learn that they think that bacon is a vegetable, it's pretty easy to get food anywhere you need to go. So being vegan is easy.
Wow. Well, thank you for helping animals.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's easy and it's good for you and it's good for the animals. So it's just win-win.
So as a vegan in the burlesque world, what are some of the biggest challenges that you face?
One of the biggest challenges is costuming, especially now that burlesque is coming into the mainstream a little bit. People really have this idea that burlesque equals feathers. You know, the big Sally Rand ostrich feather fans are just, you know, it's a general trend in fashion as well that people love animals and so they want to emulate them, which is fine. But when you want to emulate them by actually taking their bodies and wearing them, there's something so weird about that. But, you know, people who aren't thinking like vegans don't see that that's a problem. So I get a lot of requests and in some cases demands that I do acts using feathers. And that's been really hard for me. You know, it's a moral question because this is my job. This is what I have to do. And I just do this for a living. So it's, you know, I've done a lot of work because I love sewing and crafting to create costumes that have the look and the appeal of feathers. You know, they look lush and fluffy with just using fabric. So I have this big fake feather boa that sort of looks like a turkey boa. And it's like red and it's just made of satin. And then I have this big showgirl headdress that's also made of satin and wires. And, you know, people think that it's feathers all the time. There are venues in New York that just say, you know, you need to have feathers in your costume or we won't hire you. And you're
wow.
Yeah. And I'm like, do you understand how like horrible that is for the environment? You know, even if you're not an animal advocate and you just think of how the feather industry is so damaging to the workers, all the chemicals they use, the dyes, just what a horrifying process it is to get the feathers. People don't think about that at all. And it's funny, I'll see a girl wearing like a full feathery costume. And, you know, we were talking about someone who had a lot of pet birds and she was like, oh, that's horrible, the poor birds. And I'm like, but look at your outfit. You've killed thousands of them for your outfit. And there's just a real disconnect between where feathers come from and the ostriches are being bred for meat. And so at the end of that ostrich's life, it's still ending up in a hamburger or something like that. Although there is some good news. I found in the floral district in New York, I love that there's like different districts that you can just get the one thing you're looking for. I found a big synthetic pheasant feathers, which are like the long, almost like tiger stripey looking feathers, and they're long and really straight and stiff. And so I just made this beautiful headdress out of them, And it was really funny, the reaction I got when I didn't act wearing it. All these performers ran backstage because they know that I'm vegan and that I don't use feathers. And they're like, Bettina, like, where did you get these? Did you collect them in a forest that all in feathers and you're justifying using them? And I was like, no, that's the stories were quite cute. I'm like, no, they're just made of plastic.
Wow. And you actually have your own line of vegan accessories. Is that right? Can you talk about that?
Yeah,
a little bit?
Well, before I started doing burlesque, you know, I just loved everything about vintage lifestyle, you know, styles of the 30s and 40s and 50s and earlier. And so I started this line called Coquette Faux Furriers, and I made vintage style faux fur hats and gloves and muffs, like those little hand warmers and, you know, purses and all those things, because I love the glamorous look of vintage fashion, but I don't like the cruelty behind much of it. So I just started designing these things originally just for myself to wear, and I had so many people interested in them that I started making them for sale. And then I started outfitting burlesque performers because, you know, I saw all of the, you know, fur and feathers that they were using. And so I thought, well, at least I can fix the fur problem and give people something glamorous and vintage without them having to, you know, buy something new or, you know, raid the vintage closet and take real fur, which just kind of breeds demand for new fur. And so, yeah, I started making them for Vancouver-based performers like Kit and Coquette. And then I eventually ended up creating a signature line for Dita Von Teese. And that was kind of the most exciting thing of my career at that point.
Wow. Well, congratulations.
Yeah.
And you're so multi-talented. You also teach pin-up classes. So do you have any recommendations? Halloween's coming up. What are some vegan makeup or beauty products that our listeners can check out?
Yeah. Halloween is super exciting. But makeup does get to be a bit of a tricky area. Luckily, groups like PETA and other consumer groups have really great lists of the current companies that are vegan and don't test on animals. You'll want to watch out on that because those companies change a lot. Like MAC used to be cruelty-free, but now they're not because of these new rules in China about having to animal test. So that's pretty sad. But there's this awesome company that's Brooklyn-based, actually. They're made in New York City, and it's called OCC, Obsessive Compulsive Cosmetics. And they're totally vegan. I just discovered them, and I've been using them like crazy.
They're really big in the drag world too. Oh, they're growing quite a lot.
Right, yeah. Their colors are like really cute and bold, and they've got great red lipsticks, which is a tricky one because there's a tricky little ingredient called carmine that's in a lot of red lipsticks, and it's actually made of crushed beetles.
Yeah, that one was popular. It was being used in Starbucks Frappuccinos for quite a while, but due to customer demand, they've now changed their formula. So maybe one day carmine will also leave the lipstick world.
It just seems like a lot of effort. And I feel like we live in the modern world and I'm not afraid of little chemicals. Another company that I haven't tried yet is Lime Crime.
Great. Thanks for the recommendations. You already mentioned the carmine, but what should people be looking for or to avoid when purchasing vegan makeup or other beauty products?
Beeswax is another little thing that gets in. And I know some people are vegan and they use honey, but it is in a lot of beauty products, so it's something that you want to look out for if that's something you're trying to avoid. And lanolin gets in a lot of things, which is which comes from sheep's wool. You know, the companies need to know that these are things that people care about. Or an actual handwritten letter goes a long way.
Thank you very much. That was our interview with Bettina May, the pinup model, burlesque dancer, and photographer from Brooklyn, New York. Well, she's Canadian, but she's living there now. You can visit her online at bettina.ca or on her Facebook page, search for Bettina May. Today, we wanted to share a connection with the local burlesque scene as well. I interviewed Lana Delamore earlier this week. Lana is an advocate for animals and also the creator of Silhouesque, a new burlesque-influenced style, which she calls a feminist fusion of dance styles. Welcome to the show, Lana.
Thank you.
So can you tell us, what is Silhouesque?
Well, Silhouesque is a fusion of various dance styles. It's a fusion of burlesque, like classic burlesque, Broadway jazz, cabaret, tango, belly dancing, and a lot more. And it's also ever-evolving, so any instructor that gets certified through the program and creates their own choreography can bring any elements that they want into it, so long as it fits into the general aesthetic of soloesque. And the difference between soloesque and classic burlesque is that in soloesque, we don't actually strip all the way to tassels. We remove some clothing, but it's generally a little bit less than classic burlesque. So.
You mentioned that soloesque is a feminist fusion of dance styles on your website. So how does feminism relate to soloesque?
Well, feminism, for me, feminism really needs to be plural. I think that feminism is defined by each individual, and it addresses issues that are facing individuals rather than entire groups, just because it can often glaze over too many similarities and too many generalizations when it's meant to represent an entire group of feminists. So that being said, each dancer can kind of make soloesque a feminist mission on their own. For me, it's been about teaching every student, regardless of their age, gender, sex, shape, size, etc., that there is a sensual and erotic side to them, and it's not something that you either have or you don't, but it literally exists in everyone, and that it's a source of raw creative power that everyone can tap into. So it's about teaching them that it's there, and that it's something you can decide to turn on and turn off, so that you don't always have to interact on that level when you don't wish to, but you can turn it on when you'd like to, because it can be definitely very powerful. So then it's about inspiring others to use that raw creative power towards whatever end they see fit. So, yeah.
That's really inspiring. And so as a vegan yourself, how is feminism related to animal rights in the work you're doing with soloesque?
Well, for me, I would actually call myself an eco-feminist. So for me, that means ensuring that feminism is representing more than just people, and that it goes beyond that to the environment. So that means that there's a direct intersectionality between rights for women, rights for transgender individuals, et cetera, a lot of those issues that are commonly labeled as feminist, and species issues and environmental issues. With that intersectionality, what that intersectionality is basically that oppression of one group prevents and prohibits any sort of egalitarian society and freedom for the larger ecology and environment in the world, et cetera, at large.
Wow.
So that would be the, yeah.
Well, I really appreciate all the work you're doing to help people and animals and to make the planet a better place. So thank you. That's very commendable.
Yeah, thank you.
So how can our listeners get involved in soloesque?
There are various classes available. I just started teaching classes out on Denman Island. And there's mostly classes in Vancouver and New West and Burnaby. So they can enroll in some classes either recreationally, or they can audition for the performance troupe called Glamorati, which is a group of dancers of all skill levels, all ages, all genders, all abilities, etc. And it's just about creating performance opportunities for adults. So there's different levels that people can get involved with soloesque in, and whatever they decide is good for them. They can check the website, which is soloesque.ca, and see how they'd like to get involved.
Thank you very much for joining us today, Lana.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks very much, Jenny.
Soloesque is actually presenting a show called Soloesque Spectacular on November 9th at the Columbia Theater in New West, and the proceeds are going to Women Against Violence Against Women. I'm going to be performing a few numbers and doing an animal-friendly solo, making my public debut as a vegan burlesque dancer, so come check it out.
I want to see that. We have to talk.
My stage name is Faux Foxy, so you'll have to come if you want to see more. You can check out soloesque.ca for more details.
You have been listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. This was our Halloween-themed show today. Please join us on next week's show. That's November 1st. It's World Vegan Day on November 1st, so we'll be having special programming for that day. We'll be having vegan dietitian Vicento Molina coming on the show to answer some questions about vegan nutrition. She is the author of the newly published book that just came out called Becoming Vegan, the Express Edition. A lot of people are probably familiar with her, with the Becoming Vegan book that's been out for a long time, also co-authored by Brenda Davis. We'll also be having an interview with Matt Frazier. He's a no-meat athlete, a vegan ultra-marathoner, and he'll be speaking about veganism and athleticism. We here at Animal Voices ask you to please keep connected with us via the World Wide Web, and you can do so by signing up on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. Join our Twitter at Animal Voices YVR, and check out our website, animalvoices.org. Remember, it's our membership drive. We do rely on your donations to stay on the air. You can give us a call now at 604-684-8494. We'll be around for about another 30 minutes to take your calls for Animal Voices, or just go on the web at cooperadio.org and make your donation there.
We're closing the show with a song from vegan artist Fiona Apple. This is her version of Sally's song from Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas in time for Halloween. So you can stay tuned now for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Our armchair activist tip of the week is make sure you mention veganism whenever you can. So if you're at a restaurant, just mention that you're vegan and get the word out there. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today. And remember to be kind to the animals.
I sense there's something in the wind that seems like trying.